This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Welcome to new and familiar listeners. This is Lana. With me is Jazz Hans McFeels from the show Fash the Nation. We're going to discuss the alt-right versus the alt-light, which is basically libertarians and disgruntled conservatives who are unhappy with the left and who want something a little edgy, but who do not talk about race unless it's to whine that others are focusing on it. Bottom line, alt-right's foundational principle, which is uncompromising, is pro-white identity. Stopping mass immigration into European countries, keeping white nations for white people, and creating a future for white children without forced multiculturalism and leftist anti-white programming, working to destroy Europeans and the civilization that our ancestors have built. Alt-right isn't just about calling out the ridiculousness of SJWs or feminists, which most people can see now. Alt-right is the fight for a white future in white lands, free of invaders and traitors who actively seek to ruin us, to make us feel guilty for the success and might of our ancestors as a means to conquer us. The alt-right has no guilt for being born of conquerors, rulers, explorers, inventors, innovators, philosophers, and academics, men and women who have created Western civilization, the civilization which races from all around the world covet and now want to run to. When we say Western values, we mean white European values. When we say leftists, that also includes Jewish elites and Jewish interest groups actively working against European nationalism, which they fear will lead to a Holocaust. We acknowledge that there are groups actively working to enforce anti-white genocidal policies and cultural degeneracy as a means to subjugate Europeans. When we say race, we mean accepting the reality of racial differences, living in accordance with nature, exposing the lie of egalitarianism that says we're all the same. We reject globalism seeking to make us all the same. We reject capitalism, which is used to erode borders and make us mindless consumers buying poison we don't need. Jewish capitalism isn't the local free markets of national socialists. We fight against warmongers and foreign interventionist policies as we want sovereign nations, not globalist rule. And we are against an Israel-first America. We believe identity, culture, and race are intertwined, and forcing a multiracial, multicultural society will never work as it goes against nature. Jazz Hans McFeels, up next. Welcome, Jazz Hans McFeels. Thanks for being here.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Jazz Hans, isn't that some sort of a kind of a neurotic dance performance move used in show tunes, or what is that?
Jazz Hands is actually that I got the credit goes to Bulbasaur on that one. Bulbasaur used to be, as you know, part of the death panel at the Daily Showa. And I think on one of the early episodes of the Showa, he actually said, if you're going to go out and act like Jazz Hands McFeels. And I thought, I was trying to think of a nice pseudonym at the time. And Halberstam said, why don't you just go with this one? So Jazz Hands is just that ridiculous, you know, you don't want to offend anyone by clapping, so you just wave your hand silently in the air to show that you're pleased with a performance or something. total SJW nonsense, and then McFeels, obviously. But I didn't think that Fash the Nation was ever going to, well, I was excited about starting it, but didn't think that it was going to get to the point that it has, and where Jazz Hands McFeels is such a ridiculous pseudonym that I
you're
feel
stuck
like
with
I wish
it now.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, how long have you been doing Fashionation for now?
Since, let's see, beginning of August, middle of August of 2015. So not very long.
So do you plan to do this for a long time? Where do you ultimately want to take things?
So many people have said that Fashionation will not continue after the election, and I am here to say that that is not going to be the case. I'm just kidding. I'm kind of doing what Trump does. We are actually, yeah, we're going to shift gears. I think no matter what happens in the election, of course, we hope Trump wins. But I think the kind of having a media platform that is independent of the mainstream is important. And, you know, we happen to enjoy covering electoral politics. You know, having an election every 2 years kind of helps things in the U.S. But we're going to shift gears into other things. You know, Second Amendment is like a really big concern of mine. But there are many other things going on. And of course, if Trump wins, we're going to be talking all about his legislative agenda, et cetera. And if Hillary Clinton wins, then we're going to be talking about the slow, grueling downfall of what's coming, because I think this is our last opportunity, right?
I agree 100%. Well, I think you do a fantastic job. I always tell people you're probably my favorite political commentator out there in the alt-right.
Oh, man, thank you.
I want to ask, what did you think of Hillary's episode at the 9/11 ceremony, you know, where she appeared to go unconscious and the guards were dragging her into the van? What did you make of that when you saw that?
My initial reaction was, this is it, because all week prior, I had been kind of in some various Facebook groups, like shitlib Facebook groups, trolling leftists, and with trolling them by saying, how can you feel invested in a candidate like Hillary Clinton when literally anything could happen with her at any time? Like, at least we can control Trump's mannerisms. He can have consultants kind of guiding him on what to do. But Hillary Clinton just could show up at the debate stage and collapse on the floor. And like, that's it. That's your candidate right there. Like, you have all, like, with so much riding on this election, like, how can you, you know, how can you feel good about this? Just to blackpill them and make them feel bad. And then that happened, and I was like, wow, I kind of didn't expect it to be so dramatic and on video like that.
So what would happen if she did get really sick, she became ill, or what if she even died? So then what happens? Does it go to the VP pick automatically? Does he become the Democratic candidate for November, or do you know what happens?
Yeah, so I actually wrote an article. It was inspired because there was a lot of, this is like somewhat uncharted political territory here. And so a lot of people were like, what happened Sunday night? And so I wrote an article on fashionthenation.com. It was also on TRS as well, about all of the possibilities. And it, really, the each party makes its own rules. The RNC, if this happened to Trump, the RNC, they would have to reconvene the entire Republican National Convention, which was originally what I thought the Democrats would have to do as well, but they don't. They just have to convene their committee members, which is about 200 people, and they only have to have a quorum of 40% of those people or their proxies to show up, and those people can pick whomever they want. It would be convenient to have Tim Kaine because the fundraising legal entities are already there for that, and he can just continue on with the campaign. They bump him up the ticket, like you were saying, and then he would let him maybe either let him pick someone or pick someone for him that would be advantageous to the party. But he has a lot of high negatives, and a lot of people, you know, the popular conception, at least in our circles, is that some sort of deal was brokered back in 2008 where he would be the automatic pick for VP with Hillary. And there may be, you know, the party politics. They may pick somebody else. But the dangers of picking somebody else are that there is no campaign, there's no infrastructure. But you never know. Biden could come in. You know, they didn't write many rules about this, so they could probably do a number of things, I think. So
now, you're very familiar with politics, so you obviously have an interesting background. When I was on your show, you ask everybody actually about their red pill experience. So where did you come from politically, and how did you come to white identity topics? I'm always so curious to hear how people end up here, because it's been different for so many of us.
Sure. Well, I grew up in a very white area of the United States, on the East Coast, and it was a community that was majority white, well over majority white, like 95% white. And, you know, the usual kind of conventional wisdom there is, like, typically people that grow up in those areas don't have contact with diversity. And they are someone who is, you know, less likely to understand kind of these issues. But I grew up in a household in an area that was kind of pretty cognizant of these things. So this is a situation where I kind of was aware of a lot of this stuff. And then I got involved in politics when I was probably about 11 or 12 years old, was volunteering on a campaign, working with family and whatever, just a local race. And I just got involved with right wing politics. Majority of the time was the GOP. And so, I came into things like having an awareness of, you know, the different races and racial differences, and also Jews as well. We were aware of those and what they were all about, and just, you know, you don't want to. You just want to be wary of dealing with these people in business. It was kind of like the extent of my understanding. But as I got more involved in politics and ended up in Washington, D.C., I realized that, like, you can't talk about racial differences or how certain people behave in these circles. And the higher up in the circles you go, the less that you can talk about these things in pleasant company. And it was just you know, I felt kind of betrayed after working so hard to help these guys win the elections in 2010, historical election, and 2012 and 2014, and then do absolutely nothing for it. And, you know, kind of one day, Halberstram, who's a longtime friend in real life of mine, you know, pointed me in the direction of the right stuff. But I had already been kind of, you know, very interested in like Pat Buchanan and libertarianism. And I was never really like fully engaged with the GOP platform. Mm-hmm. It's just like the only place that I felt like I fit in because the Democrats were always so paused. So that's the long, long end of it. But yeah, that's pretty much how I got to where I am now.
Well, thinking of alt-right content websites, there's a core group people usually find, but what ones did you discover first that opened your eyes to white identity politics?
Well, I was aware of American Renaissance kind of long before that day that Halberstam said, you got to go check out the right stuff. So I had been to AmRen, but that was really about the extent of it. Like, I remember maybe 6 or 7 years ago, somebody had mentioned Roosh and the Manosphere. And I read one of Roosh's books and I was like, this stuff all seems like kind of common sense. I don't really see what I have to gain here from this guy. And I kind of just set it aside and never thought twice about the Manosphere again as being like anything that I needed to like be involved with. But I guess I got close enough where if I had gotten into those circles a little bit more, I probably would have bumped into the alt-right, as it were, 5 or 6 years ago, which would have been not nearly as big as it's grown today. So
yeah. So what do you think? You know, usually when things get into the mainstream, you know, the media just has a way of making things suck. You know, they water things down, they make it cheesy, they take it in a different direction. I know there's pros and cons, and I think that we should get into this on the alt-right going mainstream. What have been some of your thoughts seeing some of the press about the movement?
Well, I think it was only a matter of time before we were noticed. I mean, you know, some of the trolling activities of which there have been many epic battles in the meme war that have been, you know, pretty exciting. Those gain us attention and notoriety, you know, especially the Echo meme and some of these other things. I mean, you know, I'm sure National Review was well aware when Trump really became popular in the race that they had a comment section problem, to put it lightly. But I mean, it's hard for these, you know, and Twitter has long been known, like whenever I'm talking to like normal people that are not part of the alt-right, people will make comments about how difficult it is to operate on Twitter because anything you say, and they're referring to like, they might as well just say, if I cuck, then I'm going to, you know, I run the risk of being under a lot of scrutiny from people tweeting Holocaust denial memes at me and things like that. I mean, people are aware of this. And so it was only a matter of time before I think the media started to look at what is the alt-right, what is this all about. And I think just speaking as someone who has come from kind of inside the Beltway and have spent a lot of time in these GOP circles, I think there's always been this intense need to reject being called racist. Everybody's very well aware mm-hmm. of this. But on the other side of that is the media wanting to find tangible racist elements within the right wing. And they view the alt-right as part of the GOP. And they want to point those things out. And so they want, I think their goal here is to breathe enough oxygen into the alt-right so that they can have a new scapegoat. That's why you have the Washington Post saying half of Trump supporters are racist. You have Hillary Clinton calling us we're in a basket of deplorables. And we know that from the start. I think we all have to recognize that no matter what we say, whether it's a centrist position, whether we try to seem presentable or more respectable or whatever, you're going to be called a Nazi and a racist, and no matter what you say or do. And, you know, we know that even if you're on the total other end of the spectrum, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are also racists and Nazis at the end of the day when they're opposed to any leftist ideology. So I think it's great, the exposure. But we are in the very early stages of growing here. And it's like the ratio of fair articles to just ridiculous, wow, just wow, pearl clutching is like 1 to 10. You'll see like one pretty fair article written, and then about 9 of these just wow, just wow articles.
Exactly. And when you're in the media, of course, you know, truth matters. So you want to point some of these things out. And I know in your show, you were talking about alt-right versus alt-light. And I want to get into some of that a little bit. But earlier this year, it was, you know, Milo released a piece on the alt-right, and then the media just kind of propped him up as this queen, as he says, for the alt-right. And he's become kind of like a pop star poster boy of Western values. And I noticed there's this whole kind of cult of personality built around him. You can even see him on tours. He's carried in on a chair like a god. You know, he'll probably have a reality show soon. But people in our scene, they have a lot of strong reactions either way to him. And I've heard a lot of different angles, and I tried to just ignore him. But then I heard this clip the other day when he was asked about what the alt-right is. So I just want to play this for you.
Sure.
And what is the alt-right?
No, I mean, I've never identified as the alt-right. The press seems determined to crown me the queen of it. All I've done is give them a fair hearing in the press. I think that white identity and white nationalism is a little misleading. I think it's more accurate to say that the alt-right cares about Western supremacy rather than white supremacy. It cares about Western values. It cares about liberal, capitalist, Western democracy, democratic values, freedom, equality, that kind of thing. And it sees, you know, various threats to those on various fronts.
Now, here he's relating the alt-right to equality, liberal values, capitalism, democracy. He says it's misleading to say it's about white identity. So is this good for us when he says something like this?
So I think it's interesting. You could do a whole analysis on Milo or Milo. Anybody who is out there attempting to try to define what we are could be doing so because they genuinely want people to know what we or they themselves, the person speaking, represents. But you have to take into account that Milo was sitting, I think that was the CNBC Power Lunch interview. Capitalism, of course, that's what he's talking about on CNBC. But he's, you know, he kind of changes his answers depending on his audience. But I don't know what he really thinks because I've never talked to him. And I would probably want to talk to him to know exactly really what he thinks. But I think Western civilization is an important thing to defend, but that's not what, I mean, you know, we're, you know, whites are, you know, we always look at as the genesis for Western civilization, and that's true. But I think he's afraid to say we are, you know, we're not supremacists, but we believe that whites should have their own identity, that we should be able to advocate on our own behalf and do so without shame. I think he's afraid to go on CNBC and say that. Again, I don't really know what he thinks, but I think I don't like punching to the right, but at the same time, it's a struggle because he has potentially maybe a million. I don't know how many followers he had before his Twitter account was shut down, but he's got a pretty big following. And the point is that then you have people saying that they're alt-right, and really their definition of the alt-right, which is not necessarily a bad thing in total, taken at face value, is that, you know, that so I've seen the alt-right defined as people who are just tired of the GOP. Well, I'm more than just tired with the GOP. I don't even consider myself a Republican. But I'm a Republican in the sense that I'm going to support Donald Trump. But back to Milo, you have these people kind of getting involved and misrepresenting, I guess, what the alt-right is. So at the end of the day, I'm going to stick to my principles. I'm going to stick to what I believe in. I think Lawrence Murray has kind of outlined that pretty well in those seven tenets that I kind of outlined. And those are kind of things that it's like, if you don't agree with these things, or you think the opposite of these things, we're going to have a problem. And you're not, you can't, it's not appropriate for you to represent yourself as all right. But at the same time, if you're encouraging people to come in like the sales cone, you pick people up at different points along the journey, then it might be beneficial. It just has to be, I think, managed in an intelligent way, and it can't just be kind of haphazard and all over the place. And it seems like that's kind of what stage we're in right now.
I think constructive criticism is good. I also don't believe in punching to the right, but I also don't think cultural libertarians really view themselves to the right. I mean, they don't like identity politics at all. I mean, that's their problem. I mean, for me, when I hear a clip like this, I just think, okay, well, truth matters. And, you know, I've been using this term, and we've been working hard here at Red Ice. We've been spending a lot of our time interviewing some of the best and some of the originators of alt-right thought. And so I feel it's, you know, out of respect for all those people who have worked so hard to clarify that and call it out when something is being misdirected or redefined in a term that's appropriate for more, you know, a libertarian crowd. It's just about truth matter. So it's not really attacking him or punching, but just kind of, hey, you know that sometimes the media, or possibly, you know, he works for Breitbart. Breitbart, you know, is tied in with lots of powerful Jewish organizations. They meet with Netanyahu. So there are other interests, right, that work against us. And we know that there's a lot of Jewish groups who their interest is to stop nationalism because they think that nationalism is going to lead to a Holocaust. I mean, they're the paranoid conspiracy theorists about it. So I do keep my eyes open for those possible things, because we know there are people who like to control the narrative and play two sides. You know what I mean?
But Lana, Jews are never going to want to subvert the alt-right. They're not going to want to come in and try to meddle in our affairs and screw up what we've become very successful at doing. And by the way, the more successful we become, the bigger these kinds of problems, as you, I'm sure you're aware, these problems get bigger and more subversion occurs. Because, you know, if you told me a year ago that you would have the Democratic candidate for president, Hillary Clinton, giving a primetime speech about what we were, our political kind of point of view that didn't really exist in the way that it did a year ago. I mean, it's just amazing how far we've come. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and I think there's been so much work done, and I think some people say, well, maybe we need to water down the message, but I don't know if we're going to be successful by watering it down, because that's compromise, and we're in a place where we can't compromise, because this is survival. This is serious. You know, Henrik and I made a response to his speech, and of course, we're not making personal attacks at him, but some of the things that he said, we disagree with, that he's misinterpreting what the alt-right is about, and he says that he, you know, he's not a part of it, so why is the media, that's always the question, why are they always asking him to define it, you know? And I noticed people were saying, you know, he's got his kind of little fag hags, and they come out, stop picking on Milo, leave him alone, he's one of you, he's our voice, you know, stop making alt-right mean something for white people. And I'm like, wait a minute, all of this is all about white people, you know? I mean, I'm not about to let that definition slip from it, because that's the most important definition of all, right?
It is. It's the foundation of it. And this is the danger. I mean, it's not like we don't have a template that has completely and utterly failed at running to the center right in front of us. I mean, this was supposed to be, not to go off on the election, but this was supposed to be the coronation of Jeb Bush. This is supposed to be a continuation of neoconservatism and cuckservatism that had been going on since William F. Buckley. And that has failed. That a party that has not been explicitly right wing has been slowly moving to the left for decades. And I don't want to be a part of something that begins. We've worked so hard to create what we have right now, and we've, at least at Fascination, have tried to maintain our principles throughout this entire thing, and we're not going to compromise. We're not going to run to the center on this. And
I mean, we have to know GOP's been taken over, neocons are taken over, it might as well be the Israel party, and we just can't let that happen again. You know, we have to be vigilant about that.
Yeah, we're in the middle of winning right now. Like, let's just stop doing what we've been doing up until now. Oh, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So,
And then sometimes, you know, people say, well, there's a tactical advantage to having people who aren't on our page say that they're alt-right. Have you thought about that? What tactical advantage would there be having like cultural libertarians identify as alt-right? How does that help us?
I don't think that it is an advantage at all, because I think, look, when I was still a basic bitch GOP guy, and I'm sure this is true for a lot of the people that were libertarian, because I was kind of one foot in both camps. I was always searching for something better, searching for something more, ultimately, you know, this quest for truth. And if, you know, the red pill is in and of itself a quest for truth, you are always finding new red pills. You're finding, learning more things, doing more things. It makes no sense whatsoever to have things be called something and then mean something else. Because, you know, what if you're dragging, you know, 10,000 people in the direction of cultural libertarianism because they hear about this thing called the alt-right? I mean, I don't know. And at the same time, alt-right is a nice vehicle for getting us somewhere. But I'm not necessarily attached to that name either. I'm kind of okay with letting it go and maintaining what I believe in and being like, well, you know, you can make cultural libertarianism all about the alt-right if you want, but that's not, you know, I think people will eventually filter down to what really the truth is. And, as you know, that's what the red pill is all about. There's no going back once you go down that route.
Of course. And of course, I know we can always reinvent ourselves and what we're on this mission. I mean, we're on fire. It's not going to be stopped no matter what they do, you know? So, and we just have to have a backbone and claim and own what's ours. I think what we've collectively created in behalf of white people, because we want this to ultimately lean to political influence. And I see the alt-right being the start of that, but then you see all these other interests kind of jumping in there. How can we use this? How can we dampen this out? How can we water this out? You know how it is, of course. I mean, there's thousands of organizations that work against white people. This is all they do, is sit around and conspire how they can stop the rise of nationalism and right wing. I mean, there's like billions of dollars of think tanks going into that. So of course they're going to be eyeing the alt-right, right?
Yeah, and that's one big aspect of it. I would also be concerned about, you know, there's also seeking e-celebrity and, you know, kind of getting one whiff of attention from major media people and getting excited about that. And I think most of the time we're handling the media attention and the media contacts really, really well. But I think there's, you know, this is a movement with really no leadership, which up until now has been pretty good. It's not organized. We're all kind of doing what we do best, and that has worked out really well. But I think there's not just people from the outside looking to subvert, but because there's a vacuum, you have people from the outside also looking to kind of usurp what is here and try to either make it into something that it isn't, or try to come in and take advantage of something that, you know, look at all the different aspects of it. People could think of it as a place for fundraising. People could think of it as a place to grow a constituency group for an election. I mean, we're big enough now where they're going to start marketing to us. And, you know, for the most part, we're resistant to marketing, but,
I think it's important that we view ourselves as, it's up to us to shift the window. It's up to us to make things acceptable. We don't need to use anyone else who's out there who might have some celebrity or who might be led onto mainstream. And then certainly thinking in terms of Jews, how many Jews have helped white interests ever? You know what I mean? It's like, we have to really worry about this ourselves and take it upon ourselves to be the new media and to set the trends and to set the direction, a different flow, and not look to someone else who's kind of already in there to do it for us. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we're building our own. I thought the point of this was to build our own institutions that were ours, that we control and that we exert 100% influence over, not to kind of dilute what we're saying so that we're acceptable. Like, look, I would rather do Fash the Nation for 5 years or 10 years and gain one listener per year. Of course, our growth rate is not that flat, but I would rather do that for 5 or 10 years than compromise on 50% of my beliefs in order to have a show on Sirius XM.
Yeah.
Like I would not be able to wake up in the morning on a Saturday and be excited about doing my show if I had to temper everything that I'm saying because some guy in the office upstairs paying me my shekels will be upset if I say something to offend any number of these groups. So I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. I think we all should, right?
Yeah, we should act like they're dying. They're crumbling. The truth has left them. Any sense of life have left them, and it feels good to deny them. I've had people reach out to me for interviews and I deny them, and it feels really good. I feel proud of myself for that too. You know, it's just, we want to look to them, to the past. And I think that we should create our own thing. And that gives us even more power instead of, sometimes I see some of these, and I get what some people are doing when they want to get some words out there, but it seems like everything just gets twisted in the end. Anytime people do interviews, you know, I know James Edwards has just stopped doing it altogether for that purpose.
Yeah, they get twisted. They get taken out of context. Yeah, it's unfortunate that this goes on, but this is the reality that we're in.
So do you think if people become civic nationalists first, white people, that could possibly lead into kind of thinking in terms of ethno-nationalism? If they're thinking Western values, could they potentially move on to think about race?
I think civic nationalism is a nice, it's a step in the right direction. I think that is, you know, all of these things should be thought of as transitional phases. It's not a place where you would want to encourage or push people to land. You know, I think, I don't know. You want people to kind of keep going in being pushed. So if you push them a little bit further to the right, and then the next person they come into contact with, or the next website, or the next show they hear, or whatever, pushes them even further to the right, then I think there's some merit to doing that. But I would advocate that I would support a civic nationalist politician, because I know that a white nationalist politician is probably not going to be able to get elected in 99% of the communities around us. But if we get enough civic nationalists elected, then maybe we can start getting white nationalists elected in 10% of the communities. I mean, it's kind of just a you know, a slow, steady march. But we, you know, I think at the end of the day, we all have to kind of believe we're headed in the same direction, and our destiny is kind of inextricably linked to one another. And I think that will engender kind of more and more people waking up to not feeling shame for standing up for being a white person.
Yeah, I noticed that there's so many in the center and on the right who they oppose identity politics, but then they support it for, let's say, Jews or gays or non-whites. They just can't seem to see that double standard. And I think if we could break through that and get all those people to actually feel okay with having some white interests, maybe that could be a bigger demographic to tap into. But my question is always, how do we reach those people, right?
Well, I think Donald Trump is sort of reaching them in a way. I mean, just as one example, because we did kind of an in-depth look at Pennsylvania electorally in the last Fashion the Nation. And Pennsylvania is still pretty white, pretty working class. And a lot of those whites in working class have been Democrats for a long time. But they're not switching to Trump because necessarily they could lose their job. In fact, the building boom in Pennsylvania is actually pretty big. So they're not worried necessarily about their jobs. Some of them are, some of them aren't. But a lot of them are worried about, you know, that with the immigration stuff, because they start seeing people that don't look like them popping up in their home state. And I think those people, because they like Trump, they like their job, but they also like their country, and they see the Democratic Party kind of abandoning America, like this burger Americanism that a lot of the white working class people have. I think they start to see their jobs were at stake. Now their like neighborhoods and what they have been comfortable with all their lives is at stake. And the only conclusion that they can come to is because it's not other white people that are doing that to them. It's the immigrants that are being let into the country. And there's one group that's allowing them to come in, and there's another group saying we want to keep these people out. And I think just at a very basic level, that's enough to get people ahead three steps toward our position. And then you move them a little bit further. Crime and stuff is another thing that kind of helps people along the way. So,
yeah. I know we can't come out boom, full force with the JQ like some people like to do. You scare people off and stuff. But, you know, we've been thinking about this lately. Does there need to be kind of like a JQ for dummies, something that like really proves what we're talking about?
Yeah, it's, you know, Halversham says this a lot. It's like, yo, bro, you're just not allowed to notice this stuff. We just need to start pointing it out. I mean, just like the media, like, you know, if you sit and watch cable television for any length of time, and you keep a tally, you're going to see half a dozen commercials showing like black and white couples. And this is just something that you notice because you see it in it. And then you go out in public and you're conditioned to this being okay. We have to kind of be starting to do the reverse where it's like, you're just, you know, lightly red pilling people. I mean, just in casual conversation, when somebody says, isn't it odd that such and such and such, you can say, you know, certain things like, you know, isn't it odd that, you know, half of the Republican Party donors are high dollar donors are Jews? Like, does that seem strange to you at all? Like, why is that? I mean, just kind of forcing people to notice these things that they may not otherwise pay attention to, I think just breaks the conditioning over time.
Yeah, I think one of the big areas is the Jewish interest groups. We've looked into that. I mean, there's thousands of them, you know. And then you learn that they all push for mass immigration. They want the ethno state in Israel, but then they're pushing, you know, diversity in white countries. I think that we should be hammering some of these things and detailing some of them more so that we have to prove that they're also paranoid about another Holocaust happening, right? So they have to stop nationalism. If you watch Defamation, if you watch some of their documentaries, they tell you that, you know, they're always paranoid about the rise of fascists or Nazis around the corner. So we have to turn around on them that they're actually the paranoid conspiracy theorists that are worried about a Shoah and in any moment, you know?
Well, that's right. That's exactly right. And I mean, you look at any of these groups, we're looking at the Club for Growth, and you look at who the chairman of that group is, but he's also a board member of the American Enterprise Institute. And then you just start drawing all these connections, and it's like, you're not supposed to notice this stuff, but it's like the same, you know, it's the same panel of people that are in charge kind of running everything with the Republican Party. I mean, Bill Kristol, when you look at all the panels and groups and senior fellowships and stuff that he has, it's like these people all, you could fill a room with about 200 or 300 of them, and they're all part of this, what would seem to be a gigantic conservative apparatus, when in reality, it's not. It's just them controlling and pulling all the levers. And they are very frustrated at what's going on right now, and we should relish in the destruction of the Republican Party if he doesn't win. So I think that'll be, a lot of people are going to be starting to figure that out. Another way you can point this stuff out is like, hey, this guy who's been a decided Republican or a conservative all this time, like Jonah Goldberg, why is he so in support of Hillary Clinton? I thought Hillary Clinton was supposed to be like this really bad, evil, nasty person. Like, why is that? And why are these other people like Bill Kristol seeming to do the same thing? In fact, and then you just start pointing out all the same people are doing the same thing to a basic kind of entry level political person. I mean, this is pretty effective, I think.
Well, it seems like, you know, some of these questions have been popping up in the media though, haven't they? Some things have kind of leaked through in some of these alt-right interviews where, you know, the interviewers are always most concerned about the alt-right's view on the Jews, aren't they?
Yeah, they seem to be. Of course they are, though. I mean, that's exactly, they want to, you know, one either way, they're going to label, they want any excuse to label us anti-Semitic, and you know, we should correct them as always and say that we are counter-Semitic. We're not anti-Semitic, and yeah, you know, things like that. But they're going to do that. They're going to do that anyway. They're going to do that no matter what, unless you're out there proclaiming that our greatest ally should receive at least $100 billion in federal funding every year, Israel. Then you are an anti-Semite in their eyes.
Yeah, what is it? They just got a bump. I think it was almost $4 billion a year now from America. And I just tweeted something about that. And like, the world's richest ethnic group is getting $4 billion a year of taxpayer money for their ethno state.
For their ethno state. Yeah, totally incredible. They've when you look at what the Jews have done, they have been very successful at achieving an ethnostate, a national identity, and in really they've done it really well, and they stay over here and they control everything else over here. So
where do you think the alt-right's going to be going from here? It feels like we're going through changes. Like you said, a lot of people are coming on board. Things have gone into the media. Some things have been twisted. Some things are correct. Where do you see things going now? I mean, what kind of shape is this going to take?
It all depends on what happens in the next, 54 days. I think if Hillary Clinton wins, we're going to see a significant trend in the direction of globalism and the shuttening that was starting to occur before Trump, and a little bit when Trump was in the primaries. Excuse me, you're going to see a lot of that occurring. And it's not going to be pretty, but at the same time, you're going to see the people that are becoming aware of what's going on around them and waking up to this increase exponentially. With Trump, I think we're going to have kind of free reign over a lot of these things. You're going to see the media is going to become extremely hostile, more hostile than they ever were under George W. Bush. But at the same time, the media has lost a lot of its leverage, and I think there's a nice gap in there that can be filled. People aren't going to traditional media sources as often as they are anymore. Yes, those places are pumping Facebook and Twitter and a lot of other places, and so that wherever people go, those places are going to try to find a way to follow. But I think we need to be elbowing our way in because people who are waking up and frustrated with what they're seeing on Facebook and frustrated with what they're seeing everywhere else, they want a place to land. They want a place to go. And whenever somebody says, hey, I just listened to Fash the Nation for the first time, or my parents listened to Fash the Nation, or, I just showed this to my girlfriend or whatever, I'm kind of glad that they got in at the ground floor. They're going to start listening and, maybe start picking things up and hearing more things. We have a bunch of, FTN recommends on our website. You guys are on there. And so if someone finds Fash the Nation in this sea of degeneracy that we're all floating around in, then they can bump into a bunch of other things. And we don't want them to come bump into us and then just kind of either maybe not like it or get discouraged or whatever. We want people to find everything that there is, because we were all in the beginning kind of on that quest for the truth. And, I want to help people along their way as much as I can.
That's right.
A lot of good stuff, a lot of bright people on the alt-right.
I know. I was trying to think back, okay, before I knew that and that, how could someone have reached me? What did I need to hear to go into this direction? I think it's good to assess that. Remember where we were, what we needed to hear, and kind of be that voice for those people around us. I'm always thinking, yeah, we need creative new ways. We have to brainstorm. We have a lot of creativity in our scene, a lot of people with good ideas and lots of talent. I think we have to find ways to reach and attract people. That's going to be the next goal, is to reach them and bring them over to our side in creative new ways.
That's exactly right. And I think, where whites are most discouraged, that's where we need to be, where people feel like they're most kind of being left aside and out in the cold. And for the most part, a lot of those people are refugees, as it were, from the Democratic Party. I saw an article today that whites and Christians are leaving the Democratic Party in droves. And I think most of those people are, people that were Democrats when the Democratic Party was more conservative than the Republicans. And I think a lot of those people might be willing to entertain some of the things that we are talking about, because we kind of steer clear of all the annoying, like, basic bitch GOP issues. We kind of stick to the meat and potatoes, which I think is a good plan.
Yeah, I think that's when it could be good to really hammer out what alt-right is really interested in, right? We're fed up with anti-white politics. We're tired of mass immigration. We're tired of being called, racists and all the problems for the world, and that we can have a country of our own. And ultimately that's our goal. That's really simple, but it's really strong. And I think that will reach people. So it's important to not let that part of our message get watered down, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's important. And that's another reason why, I mean, I am running away from neoconservatism at light speed at any possible moment that I can. I mean, it's just so distasteful and it's just so repugnant. And Democrats feel the same way about this. And so that's another reason why the alt-right is not just an should not be defined as just an arm of the GOP, because it's not.
Yeah.
It's really not. We're right-wing, but I think a lot of the not all the what is right-wing today and what does that mean? You know, to some people it means Ma Israel and trillion dollar wars, but that's not what it means to me. So
it seems too that all this shock value is kind of leaving, right? I mean, there's most of the basically the only sacred cows that were left was to, you know, crack Jew jokes and talk about Holocaust revisionism. But it seems like all this is really getting out there now, isn't it? It's like, is there anything that's going to be shocking to talk about anymore?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's always shocking. People are always talking about like the conspiracy theories that pop up and some of them, you know, that Hillary Clinton has a body double or whatever. I think some people are dabbling in that. But yeah, I think it's great that some of these things that were off limits are now you can just bring them up, build a wall to port them on. I think that's, you know, it's you can just talk about that with anyone now. And before it was like, you know, you just want to be like, we need responsible immigration reform. And that's what you would say if you didn't want to sound like a racist. Now it's like build a wall to porn them all. I think it's great. Cause if these things are not off limits, then it just opens the conversation up with people who may otherwise have been shut off from it.
The other thing is too, I think that's important in our movement is to never denounce extremists that are on our side. I think that we shouldn't pick on those people. I know some people want to distance. I'm not like them over there, but we really could use all that, don't you think?
That's exactly right.
Be picking more on the left at all times.
That's exactly right. And yeah, you don't see the left doing that. They don't behave that way. You don't see Obama coming out or Hillary publicly shaming people, Bernie supporters, or even some of their more extreme left-wing elements. I mean, you just don't see that. They try to get those people in line the best they can, but you know, you could do an entire show on this. Like, look at how successful the most left-wing elements of the Democratic Party have been at pulling Hillary Clinton, who is really a neocon in a pantsuit who likes high taxes, to the left. I mean, they have been successful in their own right at doing that. And one of the reasons is because they're not dumping on their own, you know, left-wing, far left-wing people. I hate using the term far left-wing. They're more committed, more pure, more core value, left core value supporters, I guess is the best way you could put it. But
yeah, but it is quite amazing to see how Pepe, I mean, it's like the news, you know what I mean? It's just bizarre. I mean, is Pepe still going to be cool after he's been in the news so much, or is his charm wearing off now?
I think if it gets... The only way you could ruin Pepe and praise, you know, praise beyond Keck on high to make sure that this never happens. But all it would take is just a one conservative or whatever to start appropriating these memes. And then they're ruined forever. I mean, they're ruined forever. Yeah. It would take a lot to ruin Pepe. But I think if, you know, the left or some cucks or, you know, some kind of, I don't know, mainstream marketing company started using Pepe and trying to make it something else, I think we would probably just abandon it because the meme's dead.
Yeah, that might be happening, but I think new ones will always arise. Always,
oh, of course.
You know. I feel like, yeah, there is some kind of attempts to, you know, just use it like crazy until it's just not fun for us anymore. And then they hope that we'll just go away. But of course, new things will arise. They always do.
They always do. Although I am particularly fond of Pepe. And it's funny, like I bought a Pepe sweatshirt like about a year ago. And when I bought that Pepe sweatshirt, it's the angry Pepe. That's what's on it. And it's a bright blue sweatshirt. It's got angry Pepe on it with the red screen background. And that was perfectly acceptable to like wear out to the grocery store, to walking around my community. Like, never thought twice because it's just Pepe the Frog from all the memes. And now, like, when I put on that sweatshirt, I think to myself, like, because now colder weather's coming, I'm thinking to myself, it's like, is this like just totally a white nationalist symbol now? Like, will people just see this and think that that's exactly what, I mean, it really has become totally associated with the alt-right, which I think is great. But it's just funny, like, in 12 months that I've owned that article of clothing, like, how the dynamic has completely shifted.
I know, it's happening fast, isn't it? So then I think, all right, let's organize and get creative and brainstorm and see what we can do next. Let's take it to new levels, right? New heights and push this thing. I think we have to ride that wave for sure.
I agree.
So, you know, white nationalism, that's, it turns people off when you say that. And a lot of non-whites, they seem to think that it means that we're going to get into power and round them all up and gas them or ship them back to Africa or something. So when you say white nationalism, being an American, what does that mean to you?
Well, to me, at the very least, it means that we should be able to advocate on our own behalf and for our own interests, and to stop the interests of others from prevailing over ours. And I don't think we're going to have that unless we are separated. And I think that should be the eventual goal. I think white nationalism will eventually. I don't want to blackpill people, but my sincerest hope is that Donald Trump can turn things around. My fear is that he's just going to slow things down, and he's not a white nationalist, by the way. At best, he's a civic nationalist. We don't know what he really thinks, obviously, but I think secession is really going to be the only real outcome, the only eventual outcome, the only one that makes sense. And I'm hoping that it's done in a way that, you know, you have flight from each split, and it's a flight based on race, and you can slowly kind of shift gears where people can agree to live separately. And, for me, that's the ultimate goal of being a white nationalist, is a white ethnostate.
Definitely. I agree. For America, that's the best. And for Europe, they're just going to have to deport all those people because that's our continent and we need it. It's getting crowded there. Yeah, I think the other thing is, too, if we can instill, I've said this many times, a healthy white identity, then naturally people will want to separate. So then it doesn't even matter if by law it doesn't happen. They'll just instinctively, it will follow. It's almost like a vaccine to diversity. You know, they love their whiteness, therefore their body follows and wants to just be around white people.
Yeah, just imagine like the exodus from like a state like Texas that would occur if Texas seceded and said, you know, we're not going to follow any of this SJW or bullshit that's been going on in the United States. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people couldn't be afford to leave, but I'm sure there would be a lot of people that would, you know, a lot of brown people that would leave Texas. And I think if you got a few places that became predominantly 95-99% white, you know, minorities are going to want to go where other minorities are, for the most part. And then maybe if you have a few kind of white areas, that maybe those places might want to come together. I'm not saying that secession has to mean that we all whites have to live in, you know, separate places. I think they could eventually come back together. You know, like Europe may have to split apart before it came back together again. That's kind of the point that I'm making. So,
yeah, it's always important. I know. Oh, fun is good and joking is good, but we also have a lot of work to do. It's very serious. So we do have to get down to, how are we going to make this happen, right? And maybe we're not going to see things in our lifetime, but maybe it'll be our kids or our grandkids, but we have to do a lot of the hard work right now, don't we?
We do. We have a lot of hard work ahead, and it's exciting now. I mean, but this is just the beginning. This is really just the beginning.
Well, Jazz Hands, thanks so much for your time today. Let everyone know how they can hear your show and your websites, all the details.
Absolutely. So primarily we come out every weekend, usually on Saturday, sometimes on Sunday, on radio.therightstuff.biz. We also have fashionthenation.com. If you would like to visit our website, we're just starting to put out some articles. The show is also posted there, and the different segments of the show are posted there. You can follow me on Twitter at JazzHandMcFeels. There's no Jazz Hands, just Jazz Hand McFeels. I ran out of characters. And yeah, that's about it. And if it's Sunday, it's Fashion Nation. So thanks for having me on.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure. Just come to our attention that Milo, while on his Dangerous Faggot tour, which has over a $1 million budget, will be discussing how to destroy the alt-right movement. That's what it says on their Facebook page. starting on September 19th in Houston. It's very possible that he might say, give them a country of their own and then they'll be happy, but I'm doubtful, as the word destroy is a harsh word. Even when we have white nations for white people, we'll have to fight and work hard to maintain it, making sure this kind of genocidal subversion never happens again. In the end, folks, we don't need a materialistic, egotistical, gay, degenerate Jew who brags about black penis in his sociopathic mind to help us. We only need to count on ourselves, unite, brainstorm, and do the hard work to take back and take over. CNBC's Power Lunch is a corpse, and the interview they did with Milo on the alt-right was the highest rated they've had in a long time. That says it all. We are our media. We are our own leaders, and we are the people who will change the tide against all odds. We don't need a cheesy pop star, a B-list celebrity, a flamboyant libertarian, or CNBC's Power Lunch to do it. It's already happening. Be sure to watch Weekend Warrior, our live TV show, on the weekends. Visit redice.tv to find all the content we produce. And be sure to subscribe to our Red Ice YouTube channel so you don't miss a thing. Enjoy your evening.